This is the In Focus podcast from The Hindu.
Hello and welcome to the Hindus in Focus podcast with me, Amit Barua, your host for this episode. Engineered cross-voting to win extra seats in the Rajya Sabha and organized defection to bring down duly elected state governments appear to have been normalized in Indian politics. The additional two seats that accrued to the BJP in Himachal Pradesh and Uttar Pradesh recently is a case in point. Though six cross-voting MLAs have been disqualified in Himachal Pradesh, the defeat of senior lawyer Abhishek Manu Singhvi in the Rajya Sabha election points to the dangers that lie ahead for the Congress government in the state. Previously, the Congress lost three state governments in Goa, Karnataka, and Madhya Pradesh to organized defections. So is this a phenomenon that we will have to live with in Indian politics? To discuss this issue, I am joined by political analyst and senior journalist Radhika Ramasession. Welcome to the In Focus podcast, Radhika.
Hi, Amit. Always a pleasure being with you on your podcasts.
Radhika, please tell me, what do you make of this phenomena? Is this something we have to live with?
Absolutely. You know, the BJP is very target-oriented. I mean, if they say Congress Mukt Bharat, they really mean it. It's not an empty slogan. Himachal is the last state that the Congress has in the Hindi heartland. I mean, excluding, of course, Jharkhand, which is in a coalition government. They've lost a government in Bihar as well. So this is one small sliver of a government that they have in the vast swath of Hindi belt. So the BJP would be interested in seeing the Congress completely wiped out from the map of the Hindi belt. So this is one direct interest they have. Secondly, the BJP is just four short of a majority in the Rajya Sabha. Getting a majority in the Rajya Sabha really sort of, in a sense, liberates, quote unquote, the BJP from seeking help from, non-aligned parties like, say, the BJD or in the past, or even the Jagan Mohan's party or the BRS. It can be on its own. It can pass the most controversial bills, which I must add, it has managed to do so far. Nothing has really stopped the BJP from the passage of, from passing controversial laws in the despite not having a majority in the Rajya Sabha. So these seem to be the immediate considerations before the BJP. And as you rightly said in your preface, it is normalized now. I mean, nobody even bats an eyelid when a thing like this has happened. When a duly elected, duly formed state government, properly installed with a proper mandate, is toppled by gerrymandering, essentially, you know. I mean, Himachal, look at the difference. I think the BJP has 25 MLAs, the Congress is in a complete majority, and yet they managed to get one extra Rajya Sabha seat. And I'm surprised in this case, the candidate was Abhishek Manu Singhvi, one of the leading lawyers of the Supreme Court. He was completely outwitted. You know, the Congress should have seen the writing on the wall. There was a speculation about discontent within its ranks, about the BJP eyeing the malcontents within the Congress, legislature party, and so on. But the Congress did nothing, and they paid a price for it. Of course, they managed to save the government, their government, for the time being, but it's literally by the skin of their teeth, because the speaker belongs to the Congress. So as long as the speaker is a loyal congressman, I mean, and let me emphasize loyal congressman, because you never know who turns when at what juncture, Sukhvinder Singh Sukhu's government should be safe. But it's a very precarious situation that the Congress is placed in. And it looks like the opposition can do nothing against the BJP's predatory ways. I mean, wherever it can, the BJP is out to vanquish the opposition.
And would you say that whatever defections we've seen is basically a one-way street towards the BJP? It's not as if MLAs or MPs are joining different parties or former MLAs or former MPs. It's in one direction towards the BJP. Would that be correct?
That would be largely correct. I mean, you do hear of stray cases of, an MLA in a southern state or a former MLA in a southern state coming to the BJP. But when you see hordes in groups going towards the BJP, then it is not a level playing field at all for the opposition. Certainly not. You saw it in Maharashtra recently. Former Chief Minister Ashok Chavan left the Congress, joined the BJP, and with him, he took away some 55 to 60 of his men, who included former MLAs, former MPs, former corporators. In other words, the rank and file being loyal to Ashok Chavan migrated lock, stock and barrel with him to the BJP. Now, this is what is happening, and there is definitely a pattern. It's not just about spiriting away one Ashok Chavan for the BJP. That doesn't really help. Ashok Chavan may win his seat, but that's it. It is important that he brings his whole band of loyalists so that the BJP, which is relatively weak in a state like Maharashtra at the grassroots, can benefit from the following that he has in the Nanded area. That's where he's a Maratha leader of some significance. Otherwise, those 55 or 60 odd persons wouldn't have left and joined him. So that is what serves the BJP's purpose. I mean, if you look at most of the defections, there is a pattern. It's not about individuals alone. It is about groupies that come with the individual, the entire lot, which will bring some benefit to the BJP. And in the past, it is proven, whenever they've taken one person, significant as he or she may be, they come with their band of loyalists, and that helps the BJP in a larger area around that particular person's constituency. So it is important for the BJP, these defections, apart from the optics that they serve. Every day, every other day, before an election, you have a press conference announcing so-and-so joining this heavyweight, that heavyweight. It isn't just about the heavyweight. The optics are attractive, no doubt. They also probably demoralize the opposition or the party from where the defectors are coming from. It, most important, it fortifies the BJP's organization, because the BJP, remember, is a relatively younger party than say the Congress or even the various socialist formations. So its organization is not uniformly strong, if you see. I would imagine that it's strongest in Rajasthan and Madhya Pradesh, which were the original workstations for the RSS. So the RSS has struck very deep roots in both these states, and this is where the BJP's organization is strong. Whereas if you come to a state like Maharashtra, the BJP is not very strong. They still don't have their own Maratha leader of consequence. Therefore, it is very important for them to take away Marathas from the Congress or from Sharad Pawar's NCP or wherever. They have Eknath Shinde, who is not from Western Maharashtra. He's from the Konkan region, but a Maratha nonetheless. They had Narayan Rane. So these are the kind of individuals who strengthened the BJP organizationally at the grassroots. And therefore, these defections are very important, very significant.
So given that this is like now a national phenomena in a sense, what would you say are the factors that influence people to leave? Is it the fear of agencies like the Enforcement Directorate, or is it other forms of allurement? What's your sense on that?
Yeah, it's a combination of everything, Amit. First of all, the BJP is the obvious winner any which way. You know, whether they get 370 seats or they get 350 or 320 or whatever, the BJP is the front runner by a long, long shot. There is really no direct competition. So there are people who would like to be on the side of the winner. who, you know, if they are guaranteed a ticket from the BJP, like this person, Ritesh Pandey, who joined from the BSP in Uttar Pradesh, he is probably going to be renominated from his constituency, which is, I think, Akbarpur. He is he's sure of winning with the BJP's support, organizational support, Modi's charisma, and so on, which he wouldn't have had he been had the BSP renominated. Or let me put it this way: the chances would have been far less if he stood again from the BSP. Last time he won, so one is that being on the side of the winner, hoping to win your seat again, Lok Sabha, MLA. Whatever it may be, then, of course, fear of the agencies. I mean, look, the most blatant demonstration of this was Ajit Pawar. I mean, here you have a top BJP person, none other than the Prime Minister, saying in a speech a week before that NCP is equal to corruption, and he personally named Ajit Pawar as one of the most corrupt individuals in the party. And next week, what do you know? Ajit Pawar is there. He has split the NCP, broken away from his uncle, floated his own party, and become part of the NDA coalition in Maharashtra. Now, this is blatant cynicism. I mean, I have absolutely no other word for it. And it's not the first time that the BJP is doing it. Mind you, they started this process right in the 90s when, you know, they were on the ascendancy in Uttar Pradesh when they split the BSP, they split the Congress, and the most corrupt, some of the most corrupt, most criminalized elements in these parties went away to the BJP, and the BJP kind of prided itself in getting those individuals on its side because they say we need money, we need muscle power. That was the explanation that was given to some of us covering the BJP then. So it seems to be a trend which is carrying on from the 90s, except, you know, the BJP used to be a trifle embarrassed in the past about these taking such individuals on board. In fact, I remember before the 2004 elections, it had inducted D.P. Yadav from Western UP in the BJP when Vajpayee was the prime minister. And that was roundly criticized by the media. I mean, all of us listed the number of criminal cases that were pending against D.P. Yadav, his son and his nephew and so on. And, you know, faced with that kind of flak in the media, they were forced to drop D.P. Yadav. Now, that a moral compass has disappeared completely. It doesn't exist. It's non-existent. It's the BJP couldn't care less about who it is inducting as long as the person seems like a potential winner, comes with a strong cabal, and, you know, helps the BJP organizationally and in other ways. I mean, otherwise, how do you explain the presence of somebody like Brij Bhushan Saran Singh, who is also a defector? He was in the Samajwadi Party and he came from the Samajwadi Party to the BJP quite some time back, not recently. So, you know, there is nobody to ask questions. There is nobody to seek answers. So they can pretty much do what they want. And this is what is happening. And you will see many more of these such individuals joining the party in the days to come. I mean,
Radhika, you know, I heard a while ago the Delhi chief minister and Aam Aadmi Party convener Arvind Kejriwal say that, you know, I think it was in the context of Goa when he said that, you know, if you vote for a Congress person, you actually end up voting for the BJP. But we've seen that in the case of the Chandigarh mayoral election, you know, just after this botched election, some three AAP councillors have also defected to the BJP. So you think this malaise is going to extend to other parties like AAP, you know, which have so far perhaps been relatively unaffected by this disease?
Look, the BJP has had no qualms about taking away individuals from other parties. Congress is the prime target. It would love to hollow out the Congress, but it's not. It definitely targets the regional parties as well. Suendu Adhikari of Bengal, the Bengal strongman, you know, who's sort of fighting Mamta single-handedly on behalf of the BJP. He is an original Mamta associate, and there are others as well from the Trinamool Congress who joined the BJP before the last Lok Sabha elections or assembly elections. Some of them have since returned because they don't see the BJP as a clear winner in West Bengal. It is the same thing in Assam. If you see, the AGP has been targeted. Then if you go down south in the past, they have taken people from the Janata Dal secular, particularly the Vokaligas, because the BJP was very weak in the Vokaliga territory. Now, of course, they've done an alliance with the JDS, so that process will stop. But they did do that before the last assembly elections. So it's the AAP cannot pride itself on saying that the Congress is the sole target. I mean, today it's the Congress, tomorrow it may be the AAP. Chandigarh has proved that. They've taken people away from the Samajwadi Party, seven or eight MLAs who voted the BJP in the Rajya Sabha elections, who cross-voted, are most likely, it's a matter of time before they formally declare their joining the BJP and possibly getting tickets. In fact, the Akhilesh's chief whip, Manoj Pandey, the rumor is that he is going to be fielded from Rai Bareli, which is a Brahmin stronghold, one of the few Brahmin strongholds in Uttar Pradesh. So I think no opposition party is safe unless the party decides to do an alliance with the BJP, like the breakaway Sena did in Maharashtra or the breakaway NCP did. Then you're guaranteed some kind of a shield. Otherwise, every party, every leader is as vulnerable as the next one. So, Chandigarh is a classic illustration. And imagine, Amit, this was a mayoral election. I mean, who would have thought that a mayoral election would hit international headlines, you know, simply because of the foul play that was involved in the whole thing. Then, of course, the legal intervention, which kind of stopped the whole thing from descending into an utter farce. But even now, I would imagine that the AAP is not that safe or anything like that.
What is your sense, you know, how does this, in all these entire developments, I mean, it's not as if they weren't there earlier, but they seem to be, in a sense, magnified and perhaps being done in a more organized and more effective fashion. So what impact do you think this will have on our politics as a whole?
Yeah, look, what are we all saying? Where is the opposition? Everybody is talking in one sort of sentence. Where is the opposition? It seems like a one-way fight. 2024, I'm not going to call out the election or anything of that sort, because you never know. But as of now, it seems to me that the playing field is very uneven. It is pockmarked with all kinds of dangers for the opposition. I mean, because you don't know when these go ambushed, in what way. You know, in very unexpected ways, you will see things happening to the opposition. So, if you look at the map of the country, the south seems to be the only territory where the BJP has not penetrated to the extent that it would like to, barring, of course, Karnataka and serious inroads into Telangana as well. But say Tamil Nadu, Kerala, or Andhra Pradesh look to be a bit dicey for the BJP, or parts of the East. Now, Odisha, I think it has sort of yielded space to the BJP. It seems to have, at least if you talk to their Odisha leaders privately, they're all very disgruntled because they say that we just haven't got the space to evolve into a proper opposition against the BJD, whereas there is a lot of scope to take on Naveen Patnaik. But for instance, in Assam, the BJP is sort of supremely confident and right there on top, because you're having defections from the Congress every other day. And in the other northeastern states, it's riding on the shoulders of allies who anyway tend to go with the party which is strongest at the center. So the point is that, say barring a state like Punjab, where I don't see the BJP having much of a prospect, the map seems pretty much clear and in favor of the BJP. you know. So I mean, if you ask me, is it going to be a very exciting contest, 2024? I would imagine no. By and large, it won't. But you know, you have to look at pockets like West Bengal or Tamil Nadu, or even Maharashtra, where people are talking about an undercurrent of sympathy for Uddhav Thackeray. But, you know, BJP is not a stranger to Maharashtra. It has ruled Maharashtra in the past. It is ruling Maharashtra with the help of allies. So, you know, they will use all kinds of strategies and tactics to manipulate themselves and their allies into a position of strength. So even Maharashtra, I'm not very sure it is going to throw up a surprise.
Before I let you go, Radhika, you know, you made a point about how serious the BJP is about Congress Mukt Bharat or an India free of the Congress. But some people on social media are also saying that with the number of defectors joining the BJP from the Congress, it is actually a Congress Yukt BJP or a BJP tinged with many Congress people. What would you say to you know, such comments?
No, I would completely repudiate these comments with one line. The BJP is ideologically very strong still. The moment you enter the BJP, you are bound by their ideology, by the Sangh's constitution, which doesn't exist, but it's just a way of putting it. You know, the BJP is very smart on that score. It ensures that whoever joins, whether it is somebody from the BSP or the Samajwadi or the RJD, RLD, the Congress, of course, is confined to their ideology, does not move away from the bounds of their ideology. I mean, you had a recent demonstration of this in Manoj Pandey, who earlier was bound by the diktat of his party, namely Samajwadi Party, and he didn't go to Ayodhya on January 22nd for the consecration of the idol. The moment he cross-voted for the BJP, and mind you, he hasn't formally joined the BJP, what does he do? He marches to Ayodhya, goes to the Sanctum Sanctorum, offers his prayers, wears a saffron bandana, and so on. So the BJP insists on, on a defector showing his allegiance to the core ideology of the party. You know, nobody is going to say that, oh, no, the Ram Temple shouldn't have been built, or Uttarakhand shouldn't have introduced the Uniform Civil Code, or 370 should not have been diluted in J&K. No, you have to subscribe to their ideology. So this business about saying that the BJP has turned into a Congress is erroneous. I think it's a very fallacious reading of the party. There is no way that the BJP is there. Its ideology is bound by that of the RSS, and it is not going to be, it's not going to move from there. I mean, a person like Vajpayee, I would imagine, was less unsure about running a coalition, or was a little more amenable to compromising the BJP's ideology. We did have instances when the BJP's manifesto put these issues aside, or the NDA said that we are leaving these issues behind. But Modi, there is no way under Modi this is going to happen. I mean, these three issues and more issues like CAA and whatever remains will be there, and the coalition is going to be dictated entirely by the BJP. The rules of engagement are set by the BJP. Make no mistake about that.
I think, Radhika, you make a very interesting point about how the BJP is an ideologically driven party and everyone must conform to their discipline and to their views once they join. That's a really interesting point that you make. So thank you again for talking to the Hindus in Focus podcast, and I look forward to having you again on this show.
My pleasure, Amit. Thank you.
In Focus will be back soon with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.